This sermon is brought to you by Shofar Christian Church. We hope that you will be blessed by this message. Our audio and video sermons are also available on Shofar TV to download and share.
We are continuing with a lacquer topic. So when we introduced this topic, it was at the end of August, right? It was just before we had the spring dance. We had the first sermon in this series on offense. And it's interesting that I had a battle with just figuring out where am I actually going in the sermon, where am I going to drop this big word? Because the moment that you drop this big word, everybody goes like, and then in like seconds, you kind of quickly run through your file system, in my case, my piling system, and then you think, oh, no, I don't have a fence. And then you close the door, and you don't listen any further. So for half of the sermon, the word was never used. I don't know if you actually realized that. I tricked you. And then we were using the word, another way of translating it, we used the word falling away. So as we continue, now I know I didn't trick you guys because you guys listen to the word offense and you go like, oh, tell me more, tell me more. It's just for the people looking at the YouTube videos. But anyway, so now the topic is there, it's open, it's on the table, and we can continue. So just to recap, what Henny shared with us last week, he spoke about Joseph and his story. And there are basically two elements that I want you to remember from Joseph's story. The one thing is that, yes, Joseph was mistreated firstly by his brothers. And we will also be mistreated by these brothers and sisters. Why? Because we're also still maturing. We're also still growing and being refined in this beautiful life of imitating Christ. Yes, we are human. Sometimes we do it on purpose, and I really trust the Lord that's not the case. But most of the times we do it accidentally, and it's just part of our own insecurities or immaturities in that moment. But we do hurt each other. It is a fact of the Christian walk. So that's the one thing. Our brothers will sometimes throw us into that pit. And the second thing that we need to remember from Joseph's story, Joseph had every opportunity to make this his identity. Sitting in the pit, being stripped of his identity, the fact that he had this wealthy father and he would inherit a certain portion of his wealth, he could have just said, oh, wow, Lord, you gave me these dreams just the other day. Look what happened. Nothing happened. Lord, you are not faithful. You have said many things and I trusted you, but it all has come to naught. Those were the decisions that he was faced with, not once, twice, three times, many times. He must have sat with God and just, God, where's that vision of the sun and the moon and the stars bowing? I can't see the evidence thereof. So Joseph had every opportunity to just adopt a new identity and to live from that offense. We too have the opportunity to adopt this identity, to say, Lord, the beautiful things that you have prophesied over my life, I'm obviously not good enough. I'm not mature enough. I'm not gifted enough. And I see it because no one else around me recognizes me. They don't recognize my gifts, my talents. They don't slot me into the positions that you have called me for. I'm offended. And I allow this offense to grow into something that attaches to my identity. So when we talk about offense today, we're going to look at, and I know everybody now is going forward in their chairs saying, oh yes, tell me more, tell me more. We're going to talk about offense with leadership. Oh, that's a lovely topic. I know you're so excited. And also, we're going to talk about what happens when we move around from church to church to church because of our offenses. Because you see, I'm never choosing, like, this is a safe space, this is a not safe space. I'm going to move to the safer space. There's something in the spirit that happens when you walk to a place that God has not called you. You move out of that obedient following Jesus into disobedience, following yourself. There's something that happens spiritually. And you need to understand that this is something that you will bring onto your life. And I want to warn you, don't fall for the trap of the enemy. Remember, that was the start of this sermon series. It's about God is building us up into this beautiful body, into unity, binding us together by his spirit. Every single one of us had a beautiful calling and a job in this body. But the enemy doesn't like it. Because when we walk in unity, we are making trouble for him. We're making trouble for the kingdom of darkness. So he attacks the unity. And remember, that's the conversation. Offense is just the tactic, but the aim and the strategy is disunity. And we're not going to allow it because we're going to see him coming from a mile away and we're going to stand firm upon the truth that God has given us. Right? You still with me? You're excited for this sermon today? Yes, I'm also. All right, so Luke 17, verse 1. He says, then he said to the disciples, now that's Jesus talking, it is impossible that no offenses, the word scandalon, should come, but woe to him through whom they do come. Will offenses come? Yes. The enemy will tempt you out of the unity of this body, because remember the long game that he's playing? You know that little flow diagram? Just go to the previous slide? No, yeah, there at the back. The flow diagram says there's a falling away, aka offense. From the falling away, we betray one another. What comes after the betrayal? There comes hatred. What happens? Now I'm retreating up into my safe space, my stronghold. You can refer to our first sermon for this. And I sit there where I feel safe. But what happens? I'm not safe. I'm isolated. I'm isolated from the body that God gave me, who was there to help protect me. Because they can see what I cannot see. Listen, guys. By the way, remember the end result of this is deception and a bunch of false prophets. The problem with deception is that it is deceiving. When you have been deceived by the enemy, will you know it? No. You might know that you are under attack, because that's kind of fairly easy to feel. Just like Naama said, this is an attack. What do I do with it? I step on it. I use it as a stepping stone to see God in this. So attack I can see. Deception is deceiving. You can't see it. Who sees it? The people around you. Hello? Who sees the deception? Those around you. But now the enemy has deployed this beautiful tactic of getting you out of the hole, which will help you to discern the deception that the enemy is throwing away. You're not there anymore. You're here, isolated in the tower, in your stronghold, in your safe space. Now it's amazing. Now all of these people come with their beautiful words. And listen, guys, how do we know the false prophet from the true prophet? We had a sermon on this way back in the beginning of the year. We test the fruits, right? Now I'm not anymore in this body that hurt me, who let me down. I'm isolated. What do I do now? I tell people, I home church. I sign in on all of these other channels and I listen to the sermons and I'm growing spiritually. It's amazing. I listen to all of these podcasts while I'm jogging. I'm growing. The problem is, you don't know those people. Those people that you listen to, you're not having the opportunity to test their fruit. You can't test the fruit and see if they are true prophets or false prophets. You know, a lot of the, and remember, deception, the problem with it is deceiving. It sounds right, but you don't have the opportunity to test the fruit because you're not there. You're in the stronghold. Hello, guys. Do you see the enemy's tactic? don't retreat into the stronghold that is safe. It is not safe. That is where the enemy is going to get you with his deception and his false prophets. So, let's talk about leadership. In the first sermon, we spoke about our expectations, right? Where's our expectation of people in the world? It's fairly low, right? Because they're not saved. They don't have the mind of Christ. They don't have the love of the Father in them. So we don't expect much of them. So when we do come across nice people, unsaved people, we go like, oh, wow, yeah, you're amazing. You treat me better than the people in my church treat me. Why? Why did they exceed your expectation? Because your expectation was low to start off with, right? This is another thing, guys. Offense happens when you have a very specific and a certain expectation of people and they can't live up to it. Just put that in your little, pin it to your board and ask the Lord to show you what that looks like. But anyways, so your expectation is low to start off with, so they can't do a lot to offend you. In fact, they tend to surprise you often. Then it comes to your family, your relatives, right? And your expectation is kind of, yeah, because they're supposed to love you. They're genetically programmed to do that, right? So when they offend you or do something that is not in line with this expectation that you have of them, there's this offense thing happening. And it hits. Oh, and then we come to the body of Christ. I mean, this is your spiritual family. Because, I mean, you think some of your family members may be saved, or they think at least that they're saved. But, I mean, your spiritual family. Come on, we're all very mature in here. We don't make mistakes. Oh, no. And we live in obedience to the Spirit of God in us always, at all times. I mean, what can go wrong, right? So here's my expectation of my spiritual family. And when they pitch down here, because they're also still struggling and figuring out this Christian walk thing, oh, wow, the offensive's massive. Because the expectation was high. And now we're getting to the good stuff, because what happens to leaders, I mean spiritual leaders, they're holy people, that. They don't make mistakes. They are perfect in every way that it matters. Can't you see it? So your expectation of spiritual leaders, they're way up there, because Paul said, follow me like I follow Christ, right? That's what I expect in my leaders. They're going to be these beautiful Christ imitators, and I'm going to love just following after them, and we're going to be like the seven dwarves, hi-ho, hi-ho, and it's going to be this beautiful, merry experience. We're going to love each other, right? Yes, of course. So what happens when a spiritual leader trips? What happens when a spiritual leader struggles with pride and they don't have the guts to say that they're tripping? And they make it, the trip, they make it seem okay. And they're just living from there. And you're sitting here, and you're like, yo. You go, that my leader has a big problem. Maybe I should just find another leader. My leader has been deceived. My leader had a moment in which they were attacked from the enemy and they did not see it coming. They were not ready for it. We're going to talk about those things. Now, listen, there's basically two groups in this thing. Either a leader did something or said something, you misunderstood it, and there's offense. We're not talking about that. That's easy. That's a conversation. And the offense is dealt with. I'm talking about harsh leaders. leaders who did not nurture, leaders who tend to draw themselves out of the hole, and they're kind of standing here in the front, maybe on a bit of a pedestal. I'm talking about those leaders. And we're going to look at it from the life of David. So can we just quickly have the timeline of David up there? So that is more or less the timeline of David. Obviously, the years are before Christ. So you have Saul being anointed as king. And then a couple of years later, David is anointed as the next king. And then we have the David and Goliath story 5 years after, well, more or less 5 years after he was anointed as the next king. And he becomes the armor bearer to Saul. Now, what happened is after David was anointed as king, at more or less 1025, Saul heard about it and he asked David to come into his court and to just be an extra hand in the court, right? But he was there for a bit because Saul wanted to keep an eye on him, knowing that he's going to be the next leader. What is he doing? He's sussing out the competition, right? The guy is going to take his throne one day. So Saul then eventually sends David back. He says, no, you can just come when I need you. He goes back. He takes care of the sheep. And he takes some provisions to his brothers who are in the field. And then the David and Goliath story happens. After that, he becomes the armor bearer of Saul. What did King Saul give David because of the victory over Goliath? He said, you will be my armor bearer, yes. You will live in the palace, yes. You're going to marry my daughter. So what is David thinking? So it's been 10 years now since I've been anointed as the next king. I'm starting to see the unfolding of God's plan to put me in power. Because I'm living as a son in the house of the king. He's going to mentor me. Right? God is making this work out beautifully. I don't just get it like a lovely bride who's the princess. Hello? I'm staying in the king's house and he's going to mentor me into this role that God has called me for. That's where I'm going. So, but then, a couple of years later, David wins this massive battle, and the people are singing in the streets, the ladies. They're singing, yay, Saul killed thousands, but David killed 10,000. Huh? What happens to Saul? Oh, I've got competition. We do get leaders who are prone to protect their ministries instead of protecting the sheep. We do get them. So what happens? David flees from Saul and he lives in the mountains like a caveman for many, many years. What happened in the time that he fled from Saul? Twice, God gave him Saul in his hand, vulnerable. First, it was in a cave. They were hiding in the cave, and here comes Saul with his 3,000 men, his warriors, and they go into the cave probably to have a bath, maybe use the toilet, I don't know. They had toilets in caves, I don't know. But they were there, and they eventually fell asleep, having a good rest. And so Saul is here. And the men of David, they say, oh, David, this is our opportunity. We can get him. And David says, no. In 1 Samuel 24, we read about this. From verse 8, it's on the board. David also arose afterward, went out of the cave, and called to Saul, saying, what he did is he only cut a corner of Saul's robe, and he held it in his hand. Saul woke up. They went outside. And while they were still a bit off, David went out and he held up this corner of Saul's robe. And he said, my lord the king. And then Saul looked behind him. David stooped with his face to the earth, and he bowed down. And David said to Saul, "Why do you listen to the words of men who say, 'Indeed, David seeks your harm'?" David prostrates himself in humility before his leader, saying, "You have been lied to. Look, this day, your eyes have seen that the Lord delivered you today in my hand in the cave, and someone urged me to kill you, but my eye spared you, and I say, I will not stretch out my hand against my Lord, for he is the Lord's anointed. Moreover, my father," and this part gets me, David still had a desire to be mentored by Saul. He says, "My father, see the corner of your robe in my hand, for in that I cut off the corner of your robe and I did not kill you. Know and see that there is neither evil nor rebellion in my hand, and I have not sinned against you. Yet you hunt my life to take it. Let the Lord judge between you and me, and let the Lord avenge me on you, but my hand shall not be against you." Can you see the heart of David? David identified, my leader has been lied to. My leader has been deceived. I will not retaliate. I will not avenge myself. I will still prostrate myself before the one that who anointed? God anointed him as leader. Still inviting him in, saying, "Teach me. Mentor me." That is David's heart. And we wonder why God says he is a man after his own heart. His heart was soft. And I mean, let's just put this into perspective. While David was fleeing, he went through this town where there were 85 priests, and they gave him the leavened bread from the temple or the altar or whatever. And when Saul found out about this, he not only killed the 85 priests, he killed their families, their babies. He burned down their houses. He destroyed it. Now, I don't know about you, but I don't know of any pastor in South Africa or in the world that can say they're still in office, still serving the Lord, while they have killed multiple people. Do you know of a pastor that has done that? No. Here is a leader who is a murderer, who has been deceived, and who hunts the person he was supposed to mentor. And what does David do? He says, "I will not rebel against you. I will not turn my hand against you because you are the anointed of God." So what happens later on? Again, a deep sleep falls over this army of Saul. After they went away, I think it's about 2 years later, they came back again, heard where David was. Again, Saul with his 3,000 men, they wanted to kill David yet again. After David showed that his heart was soft towards Saul, what happens? The Lord put them in a deep sleep. When the Lord wants you to sleep, he lets you sleep, right? So they're all sleeping, having a wonderful time, snoozing, dreaming, I don't know. But then David and one of the guys that went with him, he's like a bloodthirsty, he's a warrior. They go into the camp of Saul. And there is Saul, lying on the ground, his spear is right next to him, and his helmet, I think, if I remember correctly. So they went into the camp, and again, this servant of David says, "Again, the Lord has handed your enemy into your hand. Seize the moment and deal with this lawless leader." Because remember, Saul is now so deceived by everything that's going on. He's not being a very good leader to Israel. So the people are saying, if you're not doing it for you, at least do it for the rest of the people who are suffering. Right? Does this sound familiar? Lord, if it's not just me being offended by my harsh leader, Lord, they are leading many people astray. We need to do something right now. Hello? What does David say? Again, he says, I will not raise my hand against the anointed of God. Let's take the spear and the helmet to show him of my love and the fact that I'm still obedient. People, there's no way that I would have been able to do that. I'm sorry. But that is the example. That is the example that God gives us. How do we deal with our leadership, whether they are good, whether they are not so great? So David took the spear, verse 12, 1 Samuel 26, and the jug of water by Saul's head, and they got away. And no man saw or knew of it or awoke, for they were all sleeping because a deep sleep from the Lord had fallen on them. Every time David refuses to harm Saul because he's the anointed leader. Later on, the very last chapter of 1 Samuel, and this is interesting, twice, David had the opportunity to avenge himself. And not just that, to free the whole nation from this deceived leader. And twice he did not. God tested his heart. Why? Because God had a vision for what he wanted in the next leader. God was not looking here. God was looking there. Bigger picture. The kind of leader that I want now for this people, this nation, is a very specific leader, and God is building that character into David. Twice, people said, this is the Lord handing him to you. And twice, David said, this is not God's plan. While he was sleeping on rocks, while he was not having the lavish lifestyle he thought he would have, it's been many, many years after he's been anointed king, and he still has not seen even an ounce of that coming to fruition. So Saul was wounded, badly wounded, in the war that they talk about in the last chapter of 1 Samuel. And Saul asked someone to just finish him off because he couldn't take the humiliation of being run through by the sword of the enemy. And no one around him was willing to do that. So Saul fell on his own sword. And he perished in a fight. You see, this is interesting. Because God gave Saul many opportunities to repent and to turn his heart back. Twice, the Lord showed Saul how David spared his life. Saul should have realized that God is saying, hello, I'm talking to you, but you are carrying on in your selfish ways, trying to protect your kingdom as if it is yours and not mine. Saul did not repent. He did not turn his heart to God. And there comes a time when God says, it is enough now. I have given you multiple opportunities to turn your heart to me. And therefore, God's protection was not there for Saul in that battle. So Saul perished. What happens? There's this guy, one of the Amalekites. He runs to David and he says, oh, King David, you know what I did? I was in this battle and I saw Saul was mortally wounded, and I took his sword and I rammed it through him. He lied. So that we find in 2 Samuel chapter 1. He lied because why? He was hoping to score brownie points with a new king. So any other king would say, oh, since you've done me the service, you've sorted out the bad king that we had, now I'm going to step into this role. I'm going to give you land and maybe a title or two to go with it. You're going to be rewarded for killing the king. What does David say? When the news of Saul's death reached David in 2 Samuel 1, verse 11 and 12, it says, there David took hold of his own clothes and tore them. and so did all the men who were with him. And they mourned and wept and fasted until evening for Saul and for Jonathan his son, for the people of the Lord and for the house of Israel, because they had fallen by sword. Verse 14, so David said to him, this Amalekite, how was it you were not afraid to put forth your hand to destroy the Lord's anointed? Again. Then David called one of the young men and said, go near and execute him. And he struck him so that he died. So David said to him, your blood is on your head, for your own mouth has testified against you, saying, I have killed the Lord's anointed. David has no joy in learning of Saul's death. Have you ever, by show of hands, come on, how many of you have felt persecution by friends, by leaders? It's a special kind of hurt and a special kind of betrayal. And after that, this harsh leader was dealt with by God. And David is not saying, well, that's about time, Lord. He tears his clothes because his leader died while still being deceived. He tears his clothes and he instructs the people to go and teach this beautiful love song, singing about the beauty of Saul, that it should be sung in the streets, that they should remember an anointed leader. Not the fact that he has fallen away, not the fact that he was misled and he didn't find his way back to the truth, but to remember the fact that God gave them Saul. God gave them Saul. And they're going to remember the good leader that he was. Lord, help us to be like this. Lord, help us to have the heart of David. In Romans 13, verse 1 to 2, it says, let every person be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God, and those that exist have been instituted by God. Therefore, whoever resists the authorities resist what God has appointed, and those who resist will incur judgment. Who appoints leaders? God. So I had the privilege of growing up in church. I came to salvation, I think maybe I was 5 years old, I can't remember. But Jesus just, he's always been there. My mom felt like, well, she is still of the opinion today that you need to be taught everything. Everything is a teaching moment. And it is when we do not understand the truth that we are susceptible to, obviously, to fall away and to be deceived. So my mom thought it was very cool to take me to every tent meeting, every traveling apostle and prophet. And we went to Wednesday night services. I mean, I had school the following day, but I was there. I was 7 years old, 8 years old. I went to all of the ladies' teas where they spoke about their husbands and their children. Oh. But God was schooling me in a lot of things I didn't understand at that moment, but it's working now. It's helping. But I had the opportunity to have many leaders, many spiritual leaders in my life. And I can tell you with absolute love in my heart, I have had more harsh leaders than gentle ones. I have had distant leaders. I have had deceived leaders. I mean, my youth leader when I was 19 years old, he told me, so you've been part of this youth for many years now. Why haven't I seen you with a boyfriend? Are you maybe batting for the other team? Yes. So the fact that I had this purity thing going with God, not going into any relationships, just being friends with boys, no relationships. He's like, are you batting for the other team? And I'm like, what, Lord? I've had interesting leaders. I had a leader to tell me while I am going through an emotional breakdown because my parents didn't have the finances to pay for my final year at school. I had two jobs at the university while doing my honors and doing my practical year in a church. Now, when you sign up in most churches as an intern, you get stuck doing all of the jobs that they don't want to do. So you're that person. You're leading the worship. You're like doing kids' church. You're helping to write sermons. And then I also was like marking other students' papers because I needed the extra money to just pay for my keep. I was working at the library until 10 o'clock at night. I was a student assistant for one of the people working in the Office for Institutional Effectiveness at the university. I was her personal assistant. And then I also taught first years on academical and personal development. I had a busy fourth year trying to just make ends meet. And while I'm going through an emotional breakdown, my leader tells me to get up and to focus on the cause. Up until today, I'm not sure what cause he was talking about. We have harsh leaders and we have gentle leaders. Sometimes we have more harsh than gentle leaders. But what I have learned through all of my experiences is that God builds character. No matter what kind of leader you have. I have a little slide up there with a diagram, and I don't want you to ever forget this. God appoints leaders. The gentle leaders, they nurture us, which is great. They help us to get healing from a lot of stuff. And then God appoints the harsh leaders as well. Why? They are part of a refining process that God is busy with in my life. And I need both of those to really mature. You see, God appoints leaders. Whether we think that they are leadership material or not, God appoints leaders. Henny and I were leaders in a congregation. We were going through a lot of marital issues. If I tell you what went wrong, pretty much everything went wrong. I was ready to walk away after 9 years. What did God do? He took us out of ministry. God took us out of ministry because our marriage was not aligned with his plan. No one took us out of ministry. God took us out of ministry. I have seen it. I have felt it. I have lived it. No one puts you in a leadership position, just maybe, because you've got leadership qualities. God appoints leaders, and he will also take those leaders out of position at his time. But while they are still in leadership, you ask God, what do I do with what I see? What do I do with how my leaders are treating me? Lord, how are you refining me in this season? God appoints leaders, guys. There's actually a scripture. I think I've skipped over it now. Let me just see where it is. Daniel 2:21. He changes times and seasons. He removes kings and he sets up kings. God is in control. You know, we need to understand there's one underlying thing that we struggle with. God is either God or he is not. Right? God is either God. He is almighty, he is omnipotent, present always, and he is in control of everything that happens in my life, or he is not. If God is God and he is in control, he also has appointed that leader over you. It's not by chance. It's not this leader that's there and God is just biding his time, trying to figure out how he's going to push that person out of position. No, he appoints those leaders. And he will remove those leaders when it is time. What happened with Miriam and Moses in Numbers 12? Miriam and Aaron, they began to talk against Moses because of his Cushite wife, for he had married a Cushite. Has the Lord spoken only through Moses, they asked? Hasn't he also spoken through us? And then it goes on. And it says, Moses was the most humble man on earth. Guess who wrote the book of Numbers? Moses. That's amazing. So Moses like puts in that little thing in the Bible. It's like, Moses was the most humble man on earth. So anyways, but what happened? Get up in. So what happens is God says we need to have a meeting. I heard Miriam and I heard Aaron speaking. Go and get Moses and the four of us, we're going to have a chat. And there descends this column. This, I can't remember, it wasn't smoke, it was, I think it was clouds or something. Yes. So God had a conversation with him, saying, you can't speak out against my servant Moses. And when his presence left the temple, there was Miriam with these white markings on her skin. She was leprous. God sorted her out for speaking out against the anointed leader of God. That's crazy. 1 Corinthians 12, verse 18. This is such a cool verse. Now, it says, but as it is, God arranged the members in the body, each of them as he chose. Now, I know that this specific portion talks more about the giftings. It's about he knows exactly what combination of gifts this congregation has. So he puts people here in certain positions because he knows what will mature the people in this body. But what I want you to think about, don't just think about the gifts. Think about the fact that God placed people in specific positions because he knows the bigger picture. Who places you in this congregation? Not you. You didn't just suddenly walk in here going like, hey, this is lack of people. I'm going to stay here. I know that's true. I know. We are lack of people. But there's something else that happens when you walk in through the doors and you go like, this is home. Have you felt that? You know it's home. You know the place that God places you in because you feel it. And you know what? If God doesn't say move, you don't move. It's not like he's going to wake you up every week saying, you can stay put. It's still fine for this week. If God's not saying move, then you stay where you're at. He'll tell you when it's time to move. And listen, by the way, even though we hate sending people and it hurts, it hurts to send people because we miss them and we love them. We do it with so much joy. When the time comes for you to go, come and speak with us. Tell us, God has given me a word to move, and I'm moving there. And then Henny and I, we will bless you with a prayer, and we will rejoice with you for what God is leading you into, because then we have to. We have to believe that God is going to grow you in a way that we won't be able to grow you. So it hurts to send people because we have grown attached to you. We love you, man. It hurts, but we do want to do it. Don't just run away. Don't just stop coming to church. Because if that is the way that you choose to leave, the possibility is great that you are not leaving with a joyful heart. Because God is leading you somewhere, you are leaving out of offense. Taste it. Taste your heart when you decide to leave this family. Taste the feeling that you have, the emotion that comes up when you think about leaving. Is it a sad one because you love this place, but you're excited for the next season? Or is it a, whew, getting away from those people? Psalm 92, and this is where this is the crux of it. This is the important part. Psalm 92, verse 12 to 14, it says, the righteous flourish like the palm tree and grow like a cedar in Lebanon. They are planted in the house of the Lord. They flourish in the courts of our God. They still bear fruit in old age. They are ever full of sap
and green. Who are the righteous? Those who listen to the instruction of the Lord and who remain obedient to that instruction. Those are the righteous. Who are these righteous? They flourish where? There where they have been planted. And there where they have been planted, they produce fruit. Psalm 1, verse 1 to 3. Blessed is the man whose delight is in the Lord. I just skipped over a couple of sentences. What is the law? The instruction, direction giving of God. And on his law, he meditates day and night. This is a picture of obedience. He is like a tree planted by streams of water that yields its fruit in its season, and its leaf does not wither. In all that he does, he prospers. Again, there is instruction, there is obedience, and there's this picture of something being planted, being rooted, and because they have been planted and rooted, they bear fruit. Psalm 119, verse 165, great peace have they who love your law. Nothing shall offend them or make them stumble. Those who listen to the instruction of the Lord, those who are obedient to the instruction of the Lord, who are they? They are the ones planted, rooted, and they bear fruit. I was doing this little study on one of my best friends with the name of Google to see what happens when you transplant a tree. So they say, each time a tree is moved, it'll go through a period of stress and reestablishment. Every time your tree is moved, it will have to adapt to root loss and changes to its environment. So moving a tree too often would pile on the stress and potentially trigger a decline. What happens when I get offended in my church family, maybe by my brothers and my sisters, or even with my leader, who is a harsh leader, right? And I transplant myself into another congregation where it looks to be a bit better. I stand the chance of making damage to my root system. A tree that is transplanted too many times, or often, their root system dwarfs. What is the problem with a dwarfed root system? The moment that a storm hits, what happens to the tree? The moment that you face adversity, the moment that you are persecuted for your faith, the moment that difficult times hit, you have not been rooted and you fall over. So when God says, this is where I am planting you, you stay there. Because what happens when a tree stays in adverse weather? The roots shoot deeper. Hallelujah. The roots shoot deeper. When there's drought, what happens to people's pipes? They burst because the tree's roots, they go deeper and deeper and they find that water source, even if it is in your house pipes. If God has planted you, even at your work, under a difficult leader, hello, you shoot those roots deep. Deep into the rock of Christ. Because when those storms hit, you will stand. You will not fall. And you will bear fruit. It's interesting that when you look at winter fruit, you look at citrus, and you look even at strawberries and blueberries, they need that last bit of cold, that last cold front coming their way. Why? It makes the juice sweeter. Hello? We need those adverse circumstances. It will teach us to persevere. It will make our roots grow deeper. It will solidify us in who Jesus is. and we will bear sweet fruit for those around us. You cannot transplant yourself from one congregation to the other, from one marriage to the other, from one girlfriend to the other. I don't know what's going on there. Anyways, you can't do that. Jump from job to job because it's not working out. Rather, take the time and ask the Lord, where do you want me? And when you've got a word to be there, you stay there until God changes the word. And whether you have harsh leaders or you have gentle leaders, you stay there because who is your ultimate authority? God is your ultimate authority, and he will tell you to move when it's time. And he will deal with your leaders in time. I had some more stuff to say, but it's too long now, so we're going to do that next week. Next week, we're going to create a space, and we're going to deal with all of this stuff. All of the stuff that the Lord has been unearthing in your heart, pushing it to the surface. I want you to go home, and during this week, you journal through this. If you want to, go back to the first sermon, the one that talks about a falling away. It was the last week in August. Go and listen to that sermon. Listen to Henny's sermon. If you want to, listen to this one again, but make notes. Go through a journal. Write down the names that God has pushed to the surface. Next week, we're going to deal with it. And we're going to trust God for healing.
Thank you for listening. Remember that our sermon audio and videos are also available on Shofar TV. Go to www.shofaronline.tv to download and share.